When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I am one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joined alongside Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. And Nate, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Mike. I have the Delta variant of the novel coronavirus. As our patrons know, and as you know, of course, we don't have Aaron here today. He's on assignment, so might be a weird show, because I'm going to have weird energy probably. I might fall asleep in the middle of the show. So we'll be relying on Mike probably to do the latter, 40% of the podcast or thereabouts. but I'm not super high energy. So we'll see how it goes. But, a pretty good episode of Dynamite here that'll hopefully carry us through it. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. It's something that, at least around here, I don't know how or why, but it's been the most damp year since I've moved up to the Carolinas, and I'm actually starting to experience erosion in my backyard, which is kind of wild. Like, just there's so much water that things can't, the soil and the clay can't retain it. And that was something that, as I was letting out the dog before getting up here recording, I was like, oh wow, I have a gully in the middle of my small backyard, like a literal gully that has been carved out by my gutter going out there. So that's what's been on my mind. Yeah, this was a really fun episode of Dynamite. This was an episode of Dynamite where there was one match I was primarily interested in, and it went on first, and then everything else, has kind of went hot and heavy. I'm someone that there is always a point usually in a Dynamite where the fatigue gets in, everything happens so much, but this one kind of felt like it was just a very complete 2 hours, and it just felt like that everything flowed together, maybe flowed together a little bit too well sometimes, but we'll get into more of that in a second. You could follow us on Twitter at Everything Elite. Nate is at Epitasis. I am at Fujiheya. Aaron is on assignment tonight, but you could follow him at Aaron Like the Car. Subscribe to the podcast. We're on all the platforms and applications. New ones are popping up each day, Nate. New websites, new come latelys have been popping up lately. I don't know why people make new podcast platforms in 2021. I feel like we're pretty much done with that, but there's more and we're on them.
Yeah, hey, as long as we're there, that's fine. That's my one requirement. If you're starting a podcast platform out there, is that you have us on.
Yeah, no, if you don't have us on here, then what you're doing. But if you are using the Apple podcast app, please rate and review us. 5 stars only, please. Those really help out. And the best way to support Everything Elite is on Patreon at patreon.com/everythingelite. We will get into it later, all the goodies we have there. But as we are wont to do after this second anniversary edition of Dynamite, it is time for us to play Elite or Delete. And for new listeners, this is where we pick out our favorite things of the show and then our least favorite things of the show. Because, Nate, I don't know about you, but I come to like criticism and stuff like this that you have to hold the things you love to the fire. And even on a very fun episode, I feel like there'll be some stuff we can get into on the Elite portion. But what was your Elite pick? What was your favorite thing on tonight's show?
So, yeah, that's tough. I think there were really two standout segments. It is, you know, when you're sick, you kind of just don't like things as much. I think, you know, I'm like 95% back to full health, but it's still like, you know, if it was a typical, what they say, Wednesday, and I was off work, I'd be like, oh, this is beautiful. I can sit here on the couch and I can play video games all day and I can watch a movie and I can do just really anything other than work. But then just when you're sick, it's like, oh, I don't have the energy to do any of that, even though it's, you know, not that it requires a lot of energy. If that makes any sense. So it's hard to sort of, you know, get your interest peaked, get your energy up, get your excitement up. But I thought the main event finish, well, not even the main event finish, the main event winner would be my Elite selection for this show. Adam Hangman Page coming back as the Joker in this match to a big reaction, an Adam Cole-esque reaction on this show, coming in and, as he always does, bringing a ton of babyface fire, you know, running wild on however many guys, six guys, getting cut off by Pac, and then, you know, ultimately coming and winning the big ladder match to get his poker chip that'll give him a future AEW title shot. You know, you can imagine a wrestling company where they overthink this and this doesn't come off as well as it does and the people don't get what they want. And, you know, Adam Cole comes back as the Joker and he gets cut off and, you know, somebody else grabs the title opportunity instead, just to keep us waiting for it. But we've now finally got the big Adam Page and Kenny Omega title match set up. It's what has really been the story of the promotion from the beginning. They talked about on commentary how Adam Page and Pac was one of the first feuds in the company. That was from the original press conference, pretty much setting them up as the two title contenders. And they, you know, paid homage to that in this match here, an effective way. Adam Page taking out Pac with the same move that he used to win at All In. And then, you know, Adam Page, the Joker again, the second time he's been the Joker after first being the Joker at Double or Nothing and getting the big reaction there to set him up as the title challenger. So I think just some kind of, you know, cool parallels, some cool poetic, you know, finish here to these 2 years of AEW, where really the guy who was the first AEW homegrown star, you know, didn't get out of the blocks and get established as that world title level guy, I think the way that maybe they imagined or we imagined, but they've kept him building and coming along slowly throughout the history of the promotion, and the crowd reactions continue to bear out that he's the crowd's guy. He's the AEW hardcore's guy. And now they're paying that off. And right at the 2 year anniversary here, making that all come full circle so that he's finally going to get the big title match with Kenny Omega that they were, really been teasing since, I don't know, it's like Halloween of the first year, I think was in the first time I turned up on BTE that they were going to feud. So that was cool. I was like, yeah, that was cool. Adam Page is cool. Huge baby face, all the fire in the world. And now we got a big title match for, I guess, the next pay-per-view probably.
Yeah. And it's something that I genuinely like doing heat checks every once in a while. And one of the big heat checks was when they came back to crowds like, oh, is Hangman still going to really carry the momentum that he was really starting to have before COVID hit? And the answer there was a euphoric yes. And then it's, oh, now that we have a promotion that has CM Punk, Adam Cole, Bryan Danielson, is this going to be something where the homegrowns, or not even like the four pillars, but like the people that like grinded their way to the promotion, like Hangman Page did? And the answer there very clearly is yes, he very much so. And it was something that on Light today, I kind of was under the impression that this would be probably a future TV title match, just because, I mean, building to Full Gear in Minneapolis on the 13th of November, it's a awkward time, Nate, I would say, because it's like the perfect amount of time, I would say, to like do a extended program building up to it. But it's also saying that this is a promotion that is more than willing to say, oh yeah, we're going to do our world title change on TV. So it's really interesting to see where they can go for there. And as you're saying, like, the crowd was insane. So it just like the entire match, like Pac being put in there, of course, pops me, Nate. But like the fact that it really felt like, oh yeah, Pac is here and he's going to be a crazy person. Orange Cassidy and Andrade, that's a match now that I want to see that came out of this match. And you just had a whole lot of stuff there. And I mean, John Moxley in a city that's pretty near and dear to him, managing first to get a superstar reaction. And then when Hangman Page came out and in a closing stretch, getting boos for the first time in the promotion, really, like, really told us that like Hangman is the anointed guy. And it's something that'll be kind of interesting, because I still think you could still do Omega versus Danielson without the title, even though they've kind of made it there. But do you think the iron's hot now after the reaction of his return, or do you think it's something that you build out and you see how things go over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, you can't ask for a better starting point for this build, I think, in terms of how hot he was. I think you're totally right that Adam Hangman Page was over enough as a babyface to get John Moxley booed out here is a great testament to how much they succeeded with getting him hot. It is, you know, their track record, I guess, with these sort of pay-per-view builds is a little confusing. It's hard to know that they're going to, you know, nail a, I don't know what that is, 6-week title build or something when they've already got the match established. But if you, it seems like they should be able, it seems like a competent pro wrestling company should be able to do, hey, these two people are wrestling in 6 weeks for the title. They've got all this history. They've got all this, you know, baggage you can look back on. And you should be able to make hay out of that and make it an even hotter title program. That's something that a good wrestling promotion should be able to do. So let's hope that they're able to do it if that's when it's happening. The other thing about the match is they're really good at setting out these multi-man matches where, you know, everybody sort of has a little story in it and everybody has a feud in it and they all, you know, kind of have some interplay. So everybody makes a little hay on whatever story they're going on. And it, you know, keeps the match exciting and it makes everybody kind of a player in the match, even if they're not going to factor into the finish or whatever. So that was another positive thing that, you know, basically everybody coming into this match, we already knew, you know, exactly who their feud buddies. You had Moxley and Archer had a feud. They played that out great where, you know, Archer goes out to meet him in the crowd and start fighting with him before he even gets to the ring. You had Pac and Andrade have had their thing. Went to a fuck finish in their big match that was built. So that seems to be a continuing rivalry. And you had this thing with Orange and Matt Hardy, that's ongoing, presumably. But I totally think you're right, because we've seen Orange and Pac before, and they again called back to that at Revolution. Orange and Andrade was instantly exciting to me when they did whatever, you know, the triple flipping over head scissors with his hands in his pockets. That was awesome. And you'd like to think that they would have a whole bunch of ideas, right? Especially because you could play off the Tranquilo thing with Andrade and Orange being, you know, lazy and too cool for school or whatever. So you got to imagine there's a great match there at some time in the future. Just, you know, hopefully it we get to it at some point. It's not just whatever Andrade fuck finish kind of thing. So I thought the match was pretty much a success for all those reasons. If I do want to make a complaint about it though,
okay.
the finish was just Paige and Moxley on top of the ladder, and they didn't really, they kind of, you know, they just traded punches for, you know, a really long time, and then they just kind of stopped, and then Moxley's like, all right, like, takes a step down and just falls off. Kind of a flat, you know, exclamation mark on the match for Hangman Page. And it's like, yeah, okay, he outlasted Moxley.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe he could have done some kind of bigger move than Moxley just being like, all right, I'm getting off the ladder now.
Right, yeah. And it's something that, like, that felt very E-drone-like. Like, that felt like an E-drone kind of finish. Like, we're like, brawling on top of the ladder, then one guy falls off. And that happened after he did the dead eye off the ladder through a table.
Yeah.
So you're like, that felt like the finish to me. And then, like, he was wiped out, which I'd say, great subversion of expectations. Like, saying, like, okay, that's not the finish you would think this is, and you're going to think he's out. And that's when the crowd really was starting to boo John Moxley, and then he pops back in the ring and does that. But yeah, no, the finish after some of the stuff happened in the match did feel somewhat flat in it. And it's something that's like, those were the two last people in the match. Like, if we really want to get granular, they would have accumulated the least amount of damage. Like you shouldn't have to fall off a ladder like that. So I totally see your point there.
Yeah, just something bigger. I don't know. I guess there's a bias in ladder matches that they want to end them with, like, multiple people on the ladder. Like, oh,
right.
You know, these are our two final people who are going to be closest, which means we have to do the shot of both of them at the top of the ladder fighting over it. And that I don't know if that's always the best or most exciting or most interesting or most dynamic finish to a ladder match is always going to that. Like, maybe just have, you know, Hangman lay him out with the Buckshot Lariat and throw him out, and then he's got the ring to himself and he can set it up and climb it. I don't know. That was just a little bit of like, oh, okay, I guess he's going to win the match. I guess it's over now.
Yeah, it's something that, like, I feel like you could have had a moment where, like, everyone's cleared, and then, like, you soak in the emotion of, oh, after the last 2 years, like, he is now back where he was when the promotion started, and him slowly crawling up the ladder. And I feel like that could have been more effective than that. Something that my elite kind of plays off of the idea of how we had, like, these, like, interwoven things happen in the ladder match. I feel like this show, which sometimes it feels like there's some very distinct things happening that people are in their own little worlds, and it's like, all right, they all coexist in this promotion, but it's not necessarily feels, I don't want to say coherent. It doesn't always feel like everything is, like, meshing as well as things mesh. And I, like, this was a night where it felt like everyone was in a promotion together. Everyone was kind of interacting, and we're, like, having just, like, various things going on. Of course, the TBS championship was announced tonight, officially, finally. That felt like one of the worst kept secrets going on today. And, like, the idea that, like, they had the promo, they had the, like, the quickfire promo for that, and then you immediately had Britt Baker later commenting on that. So it's like, okay, that's all kind of interwoven. And then you also have the Dante Martin and Malakai Black angle that happened, setting up that future match. And then Leo Rush is here commenting on this, saying, hey, Dante Martin, you're an unvalued commodity right now. I want to help you out with this. I want to take advantage of this here. And it was something that kind of felt nice, and it felt like that was, like, a coherent universe. And it's something, like, on a show where, like, there's a lot of stuff that I really enjoy, it was kind of thing that, like, I kind of sat back after the show was over, and I was like, this felt like everything was kind of interplaying with each other, and everyone, like, existed together in a way that does not necessarily feel like week to week, but this week everything did. I mean, you even had, like, you had Men of the Year and America Top Team coming out right after the Sammy Guevara match. Like, everything kind of flowed together. And I think that's something that on a show that sometimes, like, you'll have a very strong first 40 minutes or last 40 minutes, and the rest of it sometimes tails off or it's building up to this. This felt like that everything kind of worked together from the jump. And it was something that I think that's why I kind of walked away with this from the show being pretty impressed with it.
Yeah, I think they've gotten better in the last, I don't know, maybe couple months of hitting those quick backstage pre-tapes just to, it's something we've seen with the women's division a lot, especially, like, coming out of the Battle Royale, where they hit, you know, six people, and it's like, okay, we're doing this women's title tournament. We're going to hit the takes from six people, and remind you who six players are in the women's division or whatever. And they've done that more and more with just like very quick hits to backstage pre-tapes, which is something that I think is great for them to do, because it keeps the show moving at a, you know, a quick pace. It kind of keeps your energy and excitement up, because you're not just looking at the same shot all day long. You know, you're moving around the arena really quickly. And it just keeps, you know, more people in the promotion fresh in your mind, and is like, hey, well, here's what this person thinks about this. And, you know, now you just have a little more insight into their character or whatever. So when they turn up for their one Dynamite match in 3 months or whatever, then you can at least go, hey, yeah, that's right, they care about this thing, and they're going to have this match for this reason. But yeah, the Dante Martin and Malakai Black thing, I thought, was a really pleasant surprise. The, you know, when he first really, I think, had that really big breakout match of his with Kenny, I was like, well, that was awesome. It's so great that they, you know, give this kid this chance to come out here and shine like that, especially against their champion. But you know, just with the history of the promotion, it's like sometimes they forget about people for 6 months. So I was concerned, like, is he going to be another guy that they, you know, establish in 3 weeks straight on television and then just kind of put in the background for, you know, literally half a year. So it's great to see that they've continued to cycle him in on TV. And this was like just a super pleasant surprise that it's like, hey, not only is he going to be, you know, in a little program here or whatever, but he's going to get some mic time. I thought he did a great job asserting himself there, despite, you know, basically no television promo experience. Got exactly the reaction you want, where he's like, hey, you know, I think I can take on anybody. And the crowd's like, yeah, we think you can too. That was awesome. And then really a kind of perfect capper to that situation is like, oh, actually, accept this guy. This guy's going to fucking kick your ass. And the crowd's going to be like, you fucked up. With Malakai Black coming out. So that was a nice little twist. That's going to be a cool match. And that's, you know, a great next program for Malakai Black, where it's like, hey, now I can destroy another guy. People are going to enjoy seeing me destroy a guy again. But Malakai Black gets his first little, you know, singles feud experience or whatever it is. So a great way to advance both those characters. And what was the other one that you shouted out that was also good? Oh, the American Top Team thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was another pleasant surprise. Where it was like, yeah, we know Sammy and Jericho are whatever, inner circle, even though that's like, you know, kind of faded to the background. But that's just a good thing where it's like, hey, all these characters, wrestlers can have different relationships, and you can use it to your advantage and stuff like that. It's like, well, yeah, well, Sammy's mostly with Fuego now. But, you know, Dan Lambert's still going to use it to his advantage, and just makes that whole segment more exciting, more dynamic. You know, gave us a purpose for having this match on the show in the first place. And then, you know, Lambert getting booed out of the building in that promo after the fact when Jericho came out. So, yeah, just a good sense of, I don't know if anything can happen is the right terminology to use exactly.
No one's off limits, maybe.
Yeah, it feels like a living, breathing promotion. It's not a you know, promotion where everybody's segmented in these little things, and you write out with your pencil, you know, this guy's going to feud with this guy, and he's going to cut a promo on him, blah blah blah. It's like, no, these characters are kind of living and breathing, and they're all existing in this arena at the same time, and then you just kind of shake them up and see what comes out. And you know, on this show, and I think on more often than not on their television show recently, you get kind of a lively, exciting mix.
Yeah, for sure. So listener elite with Aaron gone, we're going to have two listener elites. The first one is Sean Thurman bringing up building up the Sheeta win only to have her lose, which, you know, That was something. As soon as I saw that crystal, it's like, oh, this is going to get involved in the match somehow. Real Cutco ass best in district crystal that Hikaru Shida was getting for her big milestone. So I really like that. And then Cowboy Bane said, honestly, Cody saying, what are you going to do? Shoot me to Arn. So two strong listener elites here. And if you want to submit your own listener elite, sign up at patreon.com/everythingelite. in the Discord, we have just on the show, we have a channel for everything for Elite or Delete. And you just drop them in there and we'll talk about them on the show. All right, Nate. So I was pretty high on the show. I know that this is a COVID game for you and that kind of affects things. What were the things on the show that you would that you didn't like? What would you delete from tonight's program?
Kind of a broken record on this. The Team Taz thing is just always, you know, the, so the Team Taz program with Punk was going pretty great, right? Then we go back. Brian Cage is back. He's back in the promotion. He shows up to shut down Ricky Starks, who was promoing on him in the ring. I don't know. All these, this is kind of the same story with the Team Taz feud with Darby, where it's like, I feel like we've seen this segment 16 times. And this now is going back to the promotion before it had CM Punk, and the promotion before it had Bryan Danielson, and the promotion before it, you know, upgraded and became a more important promotion. And we're just going back to these like afterthought angles where half the time they were doing them like during the ad break, or they were doing it like during the dark taping. And then they do like a recap on Dynamite, right? Where it's like, hey, Ricky Starks is here. And he's going to promo on Brian Cage, and then Brian Cage is going to run out with no shirt on. He's going to chase him off. And it feels like we've done it 15 times. It feels like it's not that important to the promotion. It feels that the promotion doesn't really care about it, because it's always the shortest segment on the show, and it's always jammed in immediately after or immediately before an ad break or whatever. And I don't even mind that the promotion doesn't really care about it, because I don't really care about it, because I don't care about Brian Cage's baby face. I think that sucks. You know, Ricky's good, but Ricky hasn't had an opportunity really to show us what he's about. He'd had like a cool pre-tape, but here, it, you know, there was nothing to this promo really. He's just like, hey, Brian Cage is a lunkhead. I don't know. There's just nothing for me here. And it seems like the promotion is as disinterested in it as I am. And yet they keep doing it for month after month after month after month. It seems like this promotion or this feud with Brian Cage turning babyface has been going on for, I don't know, 4 months at this point. Yeah. I don't know why that's the story of every Team Taz angle.
It's something where something that struck me when Ricky came out was on the lower third when they said Ricky defeated Brian Cage for the title in July 25th. I think it was July 25th, but it was in July. And it's like, oh, this feud has entered, is about to enter its third month. And I know some of it is Ricky's like neck, and he's not, and it's something that, you know, you don't, this is not probably a match that they want to have if Ricky's not like totally ready to do so, which maybe prolongs a little bit, but then you just don't have, then you just don't bring it up. You bring it up later.
Yeah. Or I don't know why they flip the title to on, like that was all after the neck injury, was flipping the title onto him.
Yeah. In his hometown, to right. be fair, or his adopted hometown,
which was the peak of this storyline by leaps and bounds. Like it was five times as good as anything else in the program has been. And yeah, the program just keeps stretching up.
Yeah. It's something that I know that like you had Ricky out there alone, and with Ricky, yeah, of course, Ricky's a great promo, but like with like Taz, in Philadelphia, I know that they probably wanted to keep it a heel reaction, but it felt like that in a way that Taz is one of the things that's making this work in a way, I would say. So just kind of, it's something that's very hard for me to be enthused. And it does seem like they're finally blowing it off on Friday with a street fight, one would hope, to be honest.
Why is it now? It just totally arbitrary. It like, please blow it off. Absolutely. Like, please, blow Brian Cage as a babyface off the television altogether for one thing. But yes, for sure, please blow this feud off. But why? Why is it the blow off of the feud now? Except that it's been dragging on for 4 months. Like, there's no logic in the story where it's like, hey, you know, where this is going to be the end of it. There's no natural breaking point where it's like, you know, we've been going at it and now you did this and I did that. And now it makes both the sense for both of us to be like, okay, this is the end of it. There's none of that. It's just like, the same thing that it's always been, which is one guy's out promoing and then Brian Cage runs out with his shirt off. And you know, the Hook and Powerhouse Hobbs are there. That I just don't get why every Team Taz angle is the same thing 15 times on television. Like, let somebody else do the same thing on television every week.
Yeah. And it's something that's like, all right, like, what do you do like with this, like the storyline, like after this, like the storyline's been played out at such a point, like, and it was something that like I really enjoyed the Ricky video from last week, and I was like, all right, we're getting to see a different side of it, then we're promptly right back to this. So
how much of a breath of fresh air would it be to let Ricky play off somebody else for a couple weeks? Like, remember when Ricky was coming out and painted his face like Darby and imitating Darby and doing all that stuff? And it's like, oh my God, let him sink his teeth into some other character, some other guy, instead of this, this, you know, Brian Cage, he's big muscle man.
Yeah. So my delete is the Darby Allin versus Nick Comrade match. And this is probably a issue that you do not have. I know that with COVID, you have to be careful about where you're going, but I'm assuming that in your, as you're convalescing, you're watching this from the Azores, of course. But if you are watching this on TV or on a streaming service, basically the entire match was during the commercial break. And it just was, real bummer. And this was after on Dark last night, it was Nick Comrade versus Orange Cassidy. And it was a fun little match. Like, it was exactly what you expect that match to be. Nick Comrade got to throw him around a lot. And then Orange Cassidy won with two orange punches and then a beach break, which, you know, made Comrade look strong because Comrade is a big guy and you can go down with one punch. And then the match started. And we had like a minute of it and then went to a long commercial break. The rest of it happened in picture, came right back. Darby hit the coffin drop, boom. And it's just one of those things that, you know, you have the picture. It's something that is very appealing to advertisers, but it's just one of those things that just, well, like, it was neat the time that they had a match and in picture, but it's really, and that's unique. And that's something that's nice to do. Like, it's nice to do a time limit draw, but having the lion's share of a match happen in the picture and a commercial break and coming back abruptly right into the finish just was a real bummer for me. So that was a match that, like, I was getting into when they announced it. I was like, oh, their Comrade looked fun in it, but didn't get to see basically any of it. So kind of a bummer for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. The match was, you know, pretty much exactly what I thought it would be. I got to be honest, I kind of like it a little more knowing that it was mostly in the ad break and then they just came back from the break and he immediately won. Because my thought while I was watching it is I was a little frustrated. Nobody gets more meaningless matches just to have a television match than Darby Allin in this promotion, where they just go, hey, it's Dynamite and Darby Allin's going to wrestle this guy. And there's no, you know, story, reason for it, no justification for it, other than, hey, Darby Allin is the star we made, and we think we should feature him in television matches constantly. Which is good, but I guess while I was watching it, I was like, yeah, okay, I know this match is going to be, I know Darby's going to win. Couldn't we have, like, couldn't the Gun Club kill a guy in an ad break and get a big win over, you know, some babyface team in an ad break to establish them and further their thing about how they're undefeated, right?
Yeah.
It just felt like, I don't know, in a promotion where there's such a appetite for time, is that? No. There's so much competition for television time in the promotion. I guess I was just like, Darby doesn't need the benefit of all this extra television time. Like, Darby is super established. He's a star in the promotion. He's super fine. You can heat him up for his big MJF program with just the angle that they did later in the show. He doesn't also have to have a Nick Comrade match for basically no reason. Meanwhile, you have 60 other people who are trying to find their footing, who's like, maybe you could put them on TV and they could, you know, kill a jobber in 5 minutes coming out of an ad break. And it would just be that television time would be worth 100 times to the Gun Club than it would to Darby Allin.
Yeah, especially because Darby's in this MJF feud. So this is completely just an out of context match. So you could have used it for something else.
And he gets more of those out of context matches than anybody else in the company, I think.
Yeah, at least on Dynamite, I would say that the fact that Hikaru Shida, this was her first televised match since since losing the title, but has had 13 matches on Dark just to have matches on Dark is the only other person I would say kind of has that, but it's a very similar.
Yeah, no, the Dark match, those none of the Dark matches count to me at all because they're totally invisible to me. But yeah, for television matches, you know, Dark. I don't know. Does Darby ever wrestle on Dark anymore?
No,
it's right.
Occasionally, but it's really? it's like once maybe a month he'll be on either Dark or Elevation and he'll win a match in 2 minutes, or if it's against a televised person like not Daniel Garcia because I already had that match, but like someone of that ilk, it'll go 8 minutes and he'll win.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I it's kind of a weird complaint to have, I suppose, because that is what they should be doing. Is like, hey, Darby's one of our big stars, you should be able to, you know, see Darby with some regularity when you turn into our television show. You know, Moxley probably has a good amount of those totally contextless matches that they just announced to have a Moxley match. He's probably like second place behind Darby in terms of those. So I get it that that's, you know, a way to underline that these guys are stars. But it is, you know, at some point you've reached a level of diminishing returns with how often you just put those guys in meaningless matches just to have them.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. But when you get a strength of schedule going in AEW and how it applies to things, like there's too many cheap wins here, too many cheap wins here. But listener deletes Alex Ron Johnson saying two different things were up next. They really hammered home up next, and something else was up next tonight. And then Tharos had one that I was really, really pissed about, but I was going to save it for his listener delete, and that is telling people to turn in 10 minutes early to see the entrances and not showing Brian Danielson's. And I like to just add an addendum. It wasn't just on social media. It was not on television either, which just felt like insane to me, Nate. Just, yeah, you had all...
Did Danielson not enter, or what? How did he not?
So the deal was that they had it streaming 10 minutes so they could start the show with everyone in the ring ready to go. So they like filled time and they introduced like Jim Ross and like Tony Schiavone. And then there was like awkward silence for a little bit. And then they started doing the entrances. All of the Super Elites entrances happened. Jurassic Express has happened. Christian's happened. And then they cut the feed.
And
no Danielson entrance.
Huh. That's funny. Yeah, seems like if you're going out of your way to turn into something to see the entrances, you should give the people the entrances.
Yes. It was all about the boom. We got the boom, but you also want to be, I think it's Born for Greatness is his name. I don't have a really good pun there. Just really wild, the fact that happened, and just kind of irked me. I'm glad that kind of irked others as well. This episode of Everything Elite is brought to you by our friends at MyBookie. With over $500,000 in contest prize money up for grabs, the NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie. And what you need and what you can do with this is you head to mybookie.ag to choose from a variety of boosts and free bets and get in on the fan favorite $100,000 super contest, which costs only $10 to enter. And this is what you do. This is a season-long thing. And what you do is you pick 5 games against the spread each week, and each win gets you a point, and each point gets you closer to the grand prize. So you hop in there. It's still early in the season. You can make up your points there. And in order to get you started on the Super Contest, you make your first deposit at mybookie.ag and use the promo code ELITE to receive instantly double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using promo code ELITE. And Nate, I did look up one. There's one bet I wanted to talk to you about real quickly here. But before we get out of this ad break here, the 2021-2022 College Football National Championship pool. They still have this open here, and University of Miami, our alma mater, is still listed. Do you want to take a guess at what the odds are for the 2 and 3 University of Miami, Florida, the University of Miami, Florida Hurricanes are right now? Just take a guess.
We're really 2 and 3. That is dire.
Dude, it's been a really bad
what
year.
What did we start ranked at? Like 14?
It was like top 15. Yeah. No, like really overrated there. But yeah, we're still listed. You can still put money on the University of Miami of Florida Hurricanes, though.
50,000 to 1.
50,000 to 1, is it? God damn it. Not the worst odds in the pool. Not the worst odds.
Wait, was that it?
Yeah, they're plus 50,000.
Holy shit. Dude, I should be a bookmaker, apparently. I nailed that.
Apparently so. So schools that have better odds than University of Miami to win the college football national titles. Wake Forest has half the odds at plus 25,000. Wake Forest.
That's a better bet.
Better bet is Wake Forest right now. Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers, plus 40,000. The worst odds, however, are for University of Tennessee, Cal, Minnesota, Stanford, Arizona, Army. It feels kind of weird betting on Army for college football, by the way. Duke and Oregon State, who are at plus 75,000. Those are the only ones that are worse than University of Miami right now.
Yeah, I guess at least we're not Duke. We can always take pride in not being Duke.
We are not Duke. And you could bet on this and a whole lot more and get it on the Super Contest at mybookie.ag. Bet anything, anytime, everywhere, or anywhere with MyBookie using promo code ELITE. So going down the rest of the show, well, the show opened up as we were just talking about with the 8-man tag. It was the super elite of Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Adam Cole versus Bryan Danielson, Christian, and the Jurassic Express consisting of Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. The finish was a quadruple BTE trigger on Jungle Boy. And this was fun, but this match was not one of the better 8-man tags. And it was an 8-man tag that I would say had some moments that went wrong pretty badly, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, the floor for this match is a super high floor, obviously. So it was still probably, I think, the second best match on the show. But, you know, kind of, yeah, it's funny. It's like, kind of knew all the beats that it was going to go through. They just signed Bobby Fish.
Yeah,
they just got the fucking graphic.
Sky Blue has not had the graphic yet, but Bobby Fish has.
So going totally far afield from this match. I like 75% through the Bobby Fish match. Tony Schiavone was like, "Oh, this is part of the TNT Open Challenge." He's like, "This is the first time it's been mentioned that this is part of the Open Challenge." Like, Sammy won the belt. Bobby did this tweet. They kept saying that it was Forbidden Door, even though. He doesn't work for another company. It's not like he's in New Japan.
He's in the MLW 2021 Opera Cup.
Okay.
So he doesn't work for other companies. Yes,
right. We know that's not a Forbidden Door situation going back to the earliest days of AEW, that the MLW contracts are just fake. But they kept saying Forbidden Door, and it's like, well, it's not a Forbidden Door. He's literally just a guy who got fired because he's 70 years old. But okay. And then all of a sudden, Tony was like, this is part of the TNT Open Challenge, that we're doing an open challenge for this belt. And I was like, oh, that's weird that they just decided in the middle of this match that it's going to be an open challenge match. My hope was, oh, Tony decided that he's not signing Bobby Fish because of this match, so now it's an open challenge match. But apparently that's not the case, even though, you know, he didn't fucking show me anything in that match. That match was absolutely the lowest point for the crowd on this show, was the Bobby Fish and Sammy Guevara match, even though Sammy was very over and got big reactions coming out. So I don't get that at all. That's a weird move. At least they got the music, I guess. Anyway, opening match on this show was like the floor version of a Young Bucks 8-man blow away indie Atomico tag match, right? Where everybody does their dives, everybody gets an awesome shine segment, they make all these guys look like $1 million. You know, everybody's sliding in and out of the ring and coming into focus when appropriate. Except that, like, Kenny did the weirdest botch I've ever seen on his assisted powerbomb to Luchasaurus. That was really weird. And then they also did a weird big, like, injury angle to Christian in the middle of the match. And then the other weird element is, like, oh, you have Brian Danielson is here in this match, who, like, wants to do his I'm super violent, I'm going to kick your head in and do my cattle mutilation stuff. But now I'm also, like, in the middle of this comedy feud with the goofball elite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was weird, but still probably, you know, the second best match on the show, because that's just kind of the baseline for these guys.
Yeah, no, it was something that I like it when matches go a little bit awry. I like it when, like, it shows you humanity, and it shows that, like, yeah, no, like, the Young Bucks are, if not the best tag team of all time, they're a top three tag team. But sometimes things don't work out for them. Sometimes Nick has to really reach out to touch Christian's butt on a Indie Taker to the floor. Sometimes a quadruple power bomb, you're just not going to make it work out. But it was just something that, yeah, no, I felt like that, other than, like, you're not going to compare the reaction that Hangman got to anything else on the show. You're not going to, like, that match wasn't insane enough. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. This was the number two match on the show. It was the floor, not the ceiling there. And then after the match, we had John Moxley backstage. He was going nuts. He's going nuts at home with his daughter. He is going nuts because no one can pin him. No one can submit him. So now they're going to put him in a ladder match. But you think, I've never done a ladder match before. And he was doing his promo, just going wild. Like, really seems like that having a daughter at home, or at least is the thing he was implying. Seems like John Moxley not getting a lot of sleep right now. And that's what we got in that promo.
Yeah. That was great. Just a great, you know, great unpredictable thing that only Moxley could say, that his daughter's insane or whatever, and that's going to drive him to be an even crazier pro wrestler. You know, that's why he's, you know, one of the best guys on the stick.
Absolutely. Then we had CM Punk coming out. He came out wearing black and red Nikes. He did a crowd dive. He did a whole bunch of Philly stuff, talking about when he was with Ring of Honor and led the ROH training school, and was very proud and dated himself, saying that he got himself a iPod and a laptop, and he felt like the richest guy in the world because he got through pro wrestling. Then he tried to cater to the crowd, talking about cheesesteaks. He messed up. Said cheesecake, and then he was got the crowd back by saying, what do you want, cheesesteaks or cheesecakes? And he was like, yeah, it's like, do you want me to buy those for you? Yeah, it's like, you can go buy your own cheesesteaks. And then he challenged Daniel Garcia, gave his sneakers to a kid in an Orange Cassidy get up in the front row, and we have that match coming up for Rampage.
Yeah, I mean, that kid doesn't, the kid's got front row tickets. He doesn't need free fucking shoes.
Like, free?
Well, I'm such a great baby face. I'm going to give the kid some free $500 shoes. The kid's in the front row.
Yeah. 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 Next to, like, fans.
Give the kid in the fucking back row the free shoes. That's so annoying to me.
Nate, what he should have done is grabbed, tied them up, swung them around, and just launched it into the crowd. But that might have been an incident. But yeah, no, the front row, why are you giving to the kid?
They would have been, yeah, I guess maybe people would have fought over the shoes or whatever, but I don't know. That was so silly to me. Yeah, I mean, he almost lost them when he said cheesecakes. Like, the energy got weird. Like, there was booing. He almost lost them when he said cheesecakes, which is
incredible.
Such a funny, man, people fucking love being territorial about their foodstuffs.
Yeah, I feel like now he has to go to each town and be like, all right, Norfolk, Virginia, let's talk about your crab boils. You know, like, he has to nail it, or else the crowd's going to eat him alive, and he's got to offer to buy them their regional delicacy.
Yeah, that's right.
After that, we had Arn Anderson lighting things on fire, tossing a blazer in a barrel. The camera went up, and it was revealed that it was Cody and Brandy's backyard. Cody was just like, what are you doing here? What's going on here? Arn had him remove his tie when he came out there. And Cody's like, you don't need to throw my tie in the fire. You don't need to do that. And then Arn just, like, disrespectfully just slapped him. And then Cody went, like, here. And, you know, Arn Anderson over the past 7 days has just had a complete renaissance of just being a violent old man, and it kind of rules right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of a novel idea, like, hey, I know we've put Arn Anderson on television for like a year straight, and he's just been a waste of space and not done anything. I know we've been doing that, but hey, what if we make him be fucking out of his mind and engaging on the microphone and do weird skits where he's lighting trash fires in Cody's backyard? These 2 weeks are, you know, by far the two most interesting things that Arn Anderson's done in this company. And I would say basically the only interesting things that Arn Anderson's done in this company. So, you know, kudos to them on that, I guess, where it's like, wow, you know, you really annoyed us with Arn Anderson and this promotion for X number of months. And then now you're actually going to do something weird and unpredictable and, you know, kind of exciting with him. That's kind of surprising, but I'm in for it.
Yeah, it's something where I feel like that Arn Anderson is just going to be beating the crap out of Cody for like the next while, and I guess before he gets his head on straight so he can go and finally face Malachi Black with his head on straight. And I'm here for it. I mean, he's already talked about pulling guns. He slapped someone that is his, I guess he no longer quit being his head coach. I guess he's back to being the head coach now, and he burnt his clothes. So I'm excited to see what Arn Anderson's going to do next week. Like, there's a lot of ways we can go with this, and all of them I feel like are equally interesting. After that was the TNT title match, Sammy Guevara versus Bobby Fish. Sammy won with a GTH that I will give Bobby Fish credit. He took that GTH and made it look like murder here. We've already kind of talked about this. Bobby Fish did get Dance Away. Tony is willing to go license production music from ROH because people tweeted him to do that. Maybe he was like, I like Dance Away. That's going to be his theme here still. Post-match, Men of the Year and America Top Team came out, beat down Sammy. Fuego came out for the save, got beat down immediately. Then Jericho and Hager came out to clear the ring. Lambert grabbed the mic as we were bailed. He was mad about the fans cheering, hated Philly, calls Miami his city, says that Jorge Masvidal is the sheriff of Miami. He's the one who runs this town. And then challenges the Inner Circle versus Men of the Year and Junior Dos Santos for Miami. Jericho grabbed a mic. It immediately broke. Lambert, all the while, is just basically losing on the microphone. Best Dan Lambert performance, I would say, while being in the promotion. He grabs a new one and then immediately accepts.
I can't remember who it was. It was either Thoros or TJ Hawk who did just an absolutely devastating own of Tony Khan on this Bobby Fish thing. You know, just about how, you know, thinking that Bobby Fish is good exposes Tony Khan as being a certain type of Ring of Honor message board poster who, you know, believes in the mediocre white guy work rate bullshit. And I can't remember who it was, but that's all I can. TJ Hawk did the other good tweet about, you know, the hypothetical scenario of Bobby Fish, a man who has had precisely four good matches in his life, getting a Dynamite tryout match in the opener slot, the biggest lock in wrestling to have a hot crowd and then getting signed off it, which is not exactly what happened because Bobby Fish fucking killed the crowd in this match for a good portion of the middle of it, but still got his deal anyway. So, you know, right idea. But I guess really the you know, the tweet proven correct by Bobby Fish even failing to clear that low bar and still getting a contract. You know, the match was fine. It was fine. He's fine. The end.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'll be excited each time I hear Dance Away, but then I'll be like, oh, I'm watching a Bobby Fish match.
Yeah. Right.
If we still get Dance Away after this, I mean, maybe Mikey Ruckus.
No, I think Mikey Ruckus did do a tweet that it's like he did a theme for him if they couldn't get Dance Away. So I think that means that Dance Away was their priority. But yeah, honestly, I was just annoyed. I was annoyed that they got Dance Away because, like, God damn it, I don't want one thing to be happy about with this guy. You know?
Yeah,
he doesn't fucking need the favor.
Yeah, you want your hate to remain pure. You don't really want anything tainting it. I totally get that. After that, we went to a bunch of segments again. The Acclaimed were backstage, or they weren't even backstage. They were sitting on a set of stairs. Max Caster repped and was challenging Lucha Bros for the tag team titles on Friday. So pretty loaded Rampage already between that and Punk and Daniel Garcia. After that, came back for commercial. Tony Schiavone is in the ring, officially announced the TBS championship, mentioned that Aubrey Edwards is the senior official. Aubrey made a look of, I didn't know I was the senior official. And likewise, I did not know that Aubrey Edwards was the senior official until just now.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then we had JR and Darby in a sit down. JR brought up the face.
Was Earl Hebner in this promotion, or was that just it all in? He was, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't
Earl
Hebner here for like 2 months?
Mike Chioda too. Mike Chioda was here for one match.
Yeah, I certainly remember the Mike Chioda, the much heralded Mike Chioda match where fucking Mike Chioda got the Bobby Fish treatment. It was like, hey, Mike Chioda's here. Ooh, roll out the red fucking carpet. but yeah, I couldn't. That's a weird. Earl Hebner was in this company for like, I don't know. Maybe he's still on the roster and backstage
stealing money.
Yeah. Anyway,
hey, I mean, just don't let him be around merch, I guess. You know, I mean, that's the thing. So then we had JR and Darby. JR brings up the face paint. Darby talked about his uncle and how he feels dead inside and kind of going over the backstory about his uncle being a drunk driver and killing himself in a car wreck, that Darby was in the car as well and Darby survived, and that's how he feels half dead inside. And then closing out the segment, he said he's seen someone like Max 1,000 times before, but Max has never faced a Darby Allin. So I thought that was pretty effective.
Isn't this something they've said on commentary like 15 times?
About his uncle?
Yeah, especially when they were first starting up the Darby push. I think they told the story about, he got in the car with his drunk uncle and he died, and that's why he painted his face. It felt like it's been in the text of this promotion for a year plus. So it's a little annoying to then do a big show of like, oh, Max is going to save for heat. And then we're going to be like, yeah, I'm going to be honest and tell you about it, JR, in a big interview. And it's like, everyone knows already.
Yeah, no, that's why I thought like the part where he was like, oh, yeah, no, that happened. And then he brought up like, OK, Max is going to have a unique experience. Like, that's what saved this segment. I feel like was Darby at the end, like talking about that, because the rest of it, you're absolutely right. It's well-trodden territory at this point. And then we had Darby Allin versus Nick Comoroto. We talked about that before. Darby won with a coffin draw coming back from break. Afterwards, QT Marshall tried a diamond cutter that Sting no-sold, and then he kicked him low and hit a scorpion death drop because Sting is cool enough that he can just shake off DDP's finish.
Yeah. It is. We've reached a point now, I guess, with Sting where he has to do this on every show. He has to death drop somebody. But I was super impressed by his no sell. I don't, because he's, 60 plus years old or whatever. I guess they just positioned it super perfectly where he was right next to the ropes, but he got up in a fucking flash. Like, it was the smoothest thing you'd ever see, where he took that bump and then he's right back on his feet. And it was like, that's a fucking pro, man. That guy has no sold stuff 2,000 times and he knows how to do it. And I'm just like, man, I'm not getting tired of that.
Yeah, he has the power of being over, and he just no-sells things, and he got up so quickly that for a second I was like, did he shove him off? It's like, oh no, he just did not act like it was a thing. I was like, hell yes, Sting.
I don't know. I think he used the ropes to get immediately on his feet, but like not even, you don't notice for a second where it like sticks out to you. He's like, oh, he pulled himself up. Like, no, he's just on his feet now. Fucking a pro, man.
What a king. What a king. We went backstage for some promos again. Dark Order is now a horizontally organized co-op. And Evil Uno said, hey, we're going to do everything as a family. We're going to do it. We're going to vote on this. And then John Silver put up the claw and everyone else did. And he was like, hey, John Silver has a great laugh for that. And John Silver got angry because now Alan Angels is unmasked and he wants Alan Angels to put the mask back on, because without the mask, he looks just like Stu Grayson, because John Silver does not. He's face blind. He's face blind. They all blicker and then Anna snapped them all back into shape.
Yeah, I hated this storyline basically throughout it anyway. So I'm not coming to it from a place where it's like, I'm not a partisan party on this storyline. The whole thing where they all just dump on Allen Angels, that should have been the fucking progress they made where they stopped doing that now. But they just kept doing it again, where it's like, hey, we all fucking hate Allen Angels. We're going to make fun of them all the time. And that's the big joke, you know, like we're in middle school or whatever. That should be where we fucking see any sort of development or progress or any sort of fucking purpose to this storyline. But they, you know, that's, they think that's big money because it's so funny that they're all like, hey, you fucking suck and you smell, blah, blah, blah. It's not like he's also just like actually their friend and it's like all part of the bit or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's not their friend. He doesn't like them. I mean, I don't know if he like actually dislikes them or anything, but
sure.
In vlog canon, he doesn't like them for that reason. And that's why he hangs out with all the people on Sammy Guevara vlog. Cause they do this hack joke where it's like, hey, we all think you suck all the time. And it's like, hey, maybe this whole fucking story where it's all about how we're fighting each other and bickering and we don't like each other. Maybe the, you know, change in our characters and our arcs that could actually carry forward is like, hey, let's stop doing this one hack joke where it's like, hey, this guy sucks. That would have been good, but they didn't do it. Cause they're, you know, it's a fundamentally juvenile act. So whatever, that's fine. It's pro wrestling. Not going to, I mean, I guess I am. I'm going to spend the last 2 minutes pretending that it's like not pro wrestling and like doing stupid juvenile shit isn't half the point.
Yeah.
But that would have been good to see. That would have been like, hey, something actually came out of this stupid storyline that I hated.
Yeah, no, it's something that's like, all right, like the big thing would have been John Silver being like, hey, buddy, you don't just look like a Stu Grayson. You are your own guy. And they have like a nice awe moment. You're like, all right, now you actually feel like a coherent group.
Yes, a big cheesy awe moment would have been not only like an actual finish of the storyline, but like probably funnier.
For sure. Yeah. Like, it's just one of those things that Dark Order is one of those things that I fundamentally like a lot, but the last few months of stuff of Dark Order just really has me back on the thing of like, has Dark Order played out its string or not, but groups don't break up in this promotion. That just does not happen unless the Young Bucks beat
you. They're all groups are constantly in a state of breaking up, but then it just doesn't happen. It's just an eternal breakup.
Yeah. No, it's like a bad relationship that you just can't, you know, cut the string there. So then we had the Dante Martin and Malachi Black segment. Dante's here to fight everyone. Good promo for Dante. Dante, surprisingly, like, it's one of those things that I feel like, I know we talked about this a little before, we feel like that Dante was like a work in progress. Instead, he is closer to being like fully actualized, like reaching his potential to begin with. The lights going out, Malachi Black came out, Black miss and the spin kick and the blackout. And then for a second, I thought he kicked him out of frame because when lights came back up, Dante was out of the ring, but Malachi Black accepted. So that was awesome. I'm really stoked for that match whenever that match happens. Then we had the Ricky Starks, Brian Cage thing. Then we went to the back. We had these quickfire promos that we were talking about earlier. Thunder Rosa, Sky Blue, Ruby Soho, and Jade Cargill are in the TBS title tournament. Jade, of course, wanted everyone to know that I missed the quote. Aaron usually writes these.
That bitch show.
Yeah. That it's going to be that bitch show title. Sky Blue had very much like the first day of school promo, you would say. well.
So yes, I mean, I've seen Sky Blue like at AEW or whatever, probably half a dozen times. It's definitely the first time I've ever heard her speak.
Okay, I was wondering this because I was like, I didn't want to be mean, well, but like how she cut a promo before, because it felt
might
like
have it. Been the, it might have been the first time she's ever spoken, judging by this, because it's like she's extremely soft spoken. You know, it works for her thing. She's got a very fresh faced, attractive young woman or whatever. So it doesn't go against what her character is going to be in this promotion at this time. But it was very funny. It's like, oh, like you guys need to like boost her microphone a little bit or something, because you can barely hear her.
Yeah. That was like the other thing I was wondering. I was like, is this a production thing, or is she just a very soft spoken person? And is this like something that she's not very familiar with? And just all in all, I was like, hey, Sky Blue is sticking around. That's awesome. I'm all for that. And I was just like, oh, Sky, this was not that, but So we have like four women that are in the tournament. I know that Nyla has tweeted about this. It's going to be real interesting to see how they kind of flesh this out, this title tournament, because it's already having like a strong first half of the bracket, I would say.
Yeah, I kind of don't care. I don't know. Like, why did we introduce a second singles belt? There's still only going to be one match per show, and there's already one belt. You need two belts when you have one match per show. That doesn't make any sense to me, but I don't care. Here's what I do care about.
Okay.
Jade does her "that bitch show" line. Good line. That's a funny line. But we already heard it because she tweeted it, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. Fucking half the other women in the promotion did this also, because half the women responded on Twitter to the report by a friend of the show, Andrew Zarian of the Mad Men, that there's going to be, you know, the new women's title, the TBS title. And all these women just responded to it on social media when the promotion had not announced it and would not be announcing it. We need better social media discipline from the people on this promotion. That's insane to me. You can't have Jade Cargill, boosting dirt cheat reports that are like, "Hey, here comes this new title to AEW," and Jade Cargill going, "I'm gonna win that. That's mine. That bitch show. Give me the title." So we just had a fucking quote unquote big announcement from Tony Khan of this pointless second belt that everybody has known about for weeks, because the people in the promotion, people in the division, the people in the tournament, are reacting to the dirt sheet reports on Twitter. That can't happen.
I will say that, like, this very much is, safeties are off on social media with this promotion with people. Like, it does feel like that there's you see this thing, you're like, oh, okay. The like, not a lot of discretion there. However, Jade should be allowed to. I think Jade is like the one person.
Okay, that's a good argument. I can hear that. If you're Jade, you can do that. If you're Big Swole, you cannot do that.
Yeah, no, but like Jade should be like, oh yeah, Andrew Zarian, he said this is going to be that bitch show title. Yeah, absolutely. So, but no, it's something that, like, this became like the worst kept secret because everyone kept on commenting on it.
Right. Okay, great. I'm so glad we got a big announcement of something that's 2 week old news at this point.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Then we had Hikaru Shida standing at 49 wins, going for her 50th win, of which she would win her 50th match crystal trophy that is given to the Cutco bestseller in her division. It was against a returning Serena Deeb. Serena Deeb won with the Serenity Lock after really taking a whole lot of the match. Like Hikaru Shida did not like steamroller. Like, this was not a 50-50 match. This was like Serena Deeb taking this match 70-30. In the post-match, Serena Deeb took the 50 match crystal and smashed over Hikaru Shida's head, walked out there. So I guess now we have a Serena Deeb heel turn.
Yeah, well, I mean, she turned heel whenever the last time she was in this promotion was, when she wrestled Riho on that.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, so did everyone on commentary, which was very annoying to me. Like,
Did she come out of the heel tunnel?
I think they only had one tunnel for that Daily's Place show.
I'm talking about tonight. I did not know if she did or didn't.
But, you know, hey, so they got some good juice out of this angle. I liked, not just having her win the trophy right away is a more interesting thing than just having her win the trophy right away. And it gave Serena Deeb the first thing in this company that she can latch on to, is like, hey, here's a little bit of juice, a little bit of identity for Serena Deeb that is like, I'm a heel and I'm such a heel, I did this to Hikaru Shida. So that's great. You're getting a lot out of what was basically a booking fuck up by the promotion, where they originally did this 50th match on Dark or whatever. So that's all good. I'm annoyed that the commentary acted like Serena Deeb was a dyed-in-the-wool, heel out of the blue. Like, it hadn't been very established in that Riho match. But, you know, whatever. Now, let's see if they do anything with either of the women.
It's the first time that there was anything with Serena Deeb in this company that I found slightly interesting, was like that happening. And it's something that for someone that, I mean, really kind of adrift, and yeah, she's had knee issues and she's had like, she had microscoping. I don't know what, if she got a procedure done on it again, but it's something that she needed some sort of juice or some sort of reason to be around here. And that at least gives that to Hikaru Shida. Now I feel like Hikaru Shida should constantly lose matches until she's like, until it's against someone that's like, unless like Alex Gracia comes back and that's who she gets her 50th win in. Like long losing streak that is just like Julia Hart ends up beating Hikaru Shida. Like everyone, like she can't get over the hump, but then like suddenly it's like Alex Gracia or Danny Jordan. Finally, she gets the 50th one, and she's like, this is the trophy. And everyone should attack her with the trophy post-match, by the way. Like, every single person. And so it's just like a husk of a trophy by the time she gets it. All right. Then we had Alex Marvez as Darby Allin was heading out of the arena. They said that MJF challenged Darby for a match next week. Darby said, of course I accept. Then a whole bunch of dang ninjas came out. There were guys dressed in all black, wearing baklavas, came out and beat the living shit out of Darby. Some of them came out of a limo. One of them picked up a camera for whatever reason. And it was very clear that it was all the Pinnacle, especially because you could see one of the FTR guys wearing the peg jeans, like that kind of gave up the ghost there. And also the fact that one guy was significantly bigger than the rest, picked him up, threw him into a bunch of barricades, and then picked him up and gave him the F10 onto the barricades. So we already have MJF taking out Darby of a match that was announced not less than 3 minutes beforehand.
I did a catty post about Bobby Fish on the.
Yeah, I saw that someone actually hit you with a ratio on that.
Yeah, I've muted, I think, 10 repliers. here's a beautiful thing. If you reply to me and disagree with me, I just put you on mute forever. And then you don't exist anymore. so this angle, Sean Spears, the chair joker, hits him with the chair, right? And then takes the camera from the cameraman, right? And then they have a second cameraman who's there only for the purposes of showing that Sean Spears took the first camera, right?
Right, yes.
Why?
Buddy, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it as well.
The only way that him having the camera came into play at all is he did a very cringe Joker laugh a couple times. they sent the second camera person over there to firmly establish over and over again for the audience, Sean Spears has the camera, only so that there was some kind of explanation for why he was doing a stupid Joker laugh directly into the microphone. That is the only conclusion I can reach. And that is the only thing I thought about during this entire set.
It just was like such a thing that I was like, oh, why are y'all in baklavas to begin with? Like, it's like thing, like the limo came out. It's like, oh, the Pinnacle's cutting out a limo. You could have just had them all get out there. Like, you didn't need to do this. Like, this was like a secret ops beat down when you have one guy who's significantly bigger than the rest, someone being a joker, someone wearing peg jeans. Like, that was the thing that kind of, I was like, why are we doing this way? And then I'll have to say, Darby, that F10 that Wardlow did that was on top of a bunch of barricades and a stop sign there for whatever reason, was really, really sick. But it's just, there were a lot of things going on in this segment that I don't really want an explanation. I'm wondering if now the Pinnacle are just going to become like a secret forces unit that just wear baklavas everywhere. I'm wondering if that's their next thing. After that, we had Leo Rush backstage. Leo backstage saying he's a big fan of Dante Martin, who he knew can't see this right now because of all the mist. You know, he's LBO Leo because he's a businessman. Dante is hurting and he's an undervalued commodity. And he offered his guidance for the Malakai match. So LBO Leo, 2 for 2, I'd have to say. Like, I was a big fan of this segment. What were your thoughts on it?
That's a good pairing, Leo and Dante. I like that. Yeah.
then the last segment we had of the night was Tony Schiavone backstage with Britt Baker, Rebel, and Jamie Hayter. Britt said that the new TBS title should be the Cartoon Network title. Now all the jealous people in the back can fight amongst themselves and stop obsessing over her, and she'll just be up here watching from the top. So I like the fact that like Britt was like, all right, y'all go do this. This means that y'all aren't coming for me. I thought that that was pretty solid out of her. Cartoon Network title, though, I mean, there's other parts of the Warner Media portfolio that I feel like she got a title before Cartoon Network. I feel like, I know Court TV is no longer a thing, but the Court TV title, I feel like, had an opportunity there. There's just a lot of other options that Cartoon Network, other than she's calling them all clowns, I guess.
Yeah, this current TBS logo just has no capital to it whatsoever. No equity with this TBS logo. They should have used.
It doesn't look good on the belt. It does not look good on the belt.
Yeah, well, it doesn't look good. And I mean, in general, nobody cares about it. And yeah, they should have done the classic TBS lettering, the big serifs, you know, in all caps instead of this. I mean, I'm sure it's not an option at all, but you know, the TNT title has a little zing to it. It's got a little bit of, you know, flavor. Got a little equity from the TNT brand, the Monday Nitro. You know, just the logo looks a little more. The TBS is just fucking Family Guy channel and goofy little, you know, it looks like a 20.
It looks like a vertical.
It looks like a 2017 corporate rebrand.
Right.
Because that's what it is. And it just, you know, doesn't have anything. There's nothing to it.
Are you familiar with what the current TBS motto is?
I think somebody, so it's not very funny or funny or we're comedy or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's something since those.
Always here for a good time.
Okay.
They stole my phrase. They stole my phrase somewhat.
Whereas is that your phrase?
I say something, I'm just like, yeah, I had a great time. I'm having a good time here. This match was a good time. You know, I say that a those lot.
Those aren't catchphrases. Good, you don't get exclusive rights to saying good time, Mike.
The TV show's claim date has been gone for a long time. I came in here first. So they just came out with this in 2020. I've been saying things. I had a great time. I had a good time for a while.
I had a great time. That's just normal conversation. You cannot lay claim to I had a great time.
TNT's is Boom, which, you know, TNT, Dynamite.
Yeah,
Boom.
Okay.
Fantastic. True TV, funny because it's true. TRU. USA Network is no longer characters welcome. It is now here for the characters. So we got to talk to these ad wizards about these mottos.
This is a direct downgrade. It's like, oh, this character welcome thing, this is over. So let's change it to something more unwieldy and, you know, less simple. That's, you know, when you can do that, that's when you're a master of branding.
Yeah, for sure. And then we had the main event casino ladder match. The entrance order was Orange Cassidy with the Philadelphia 76ers mascot Franklin the Dog, Pac, Andrade, Matt Hardy, Lance Archer, who came in during a commercial break, John Moxley, and then the Joker, of course, was Hangman Adam Page. Page won after they were fighting on top of the ladder, and that match was insane. Do you have any more thoughts on the match before we get out of here?
No.
All right. So that was Dynamite. What we have looking ahead on Rampage, we have a tag team titles match, Lucha Brothers versus The Acclaimed, CM Punk versus Daniel Garcia, Jade Cargill versus Sky Blue. For the FTW title, we have a Philly Street Fight, Ricky Starks versus Brian Cage. As they're moving Dynamite to Saturdays next week, we don't really have anything. For the next televised show after that, there'll be Rampage in Miami on the 15th, and they'll be back the next night with Dynamite. If you'd like to support Everything Elite, the best way to do that is at patreon.com/everythingelite. We have three tiers, $3, $5, $8. Here's the deal. For $3, you get our weekly show, AEW Lite. It comes out every Wednesday morning, and that is Aaron and I previewing Dynamite, talking about a dark elevation in row two and Nate with the BTE Quickets. At $5, you get access to all of our shows. We've been, it'll be 2 years in after Full Gear this year. It'll be 2 years of this. I think I saw it was like 400. It's maybe not 400 shows because there's other postings, but we've been doing this now for 2 years. So it's over 200 shows easily, including World Tour. That is our new show that we launched with Rampage, where every weekend we rotate around and we talk about AEW Rampage. We also do bonus shows. This week, Aaron and I did the first part of This Is Bryan Danielson, where we picked five matches and talked about Bryan Danielson's career through it. In the first episode, we went through the Roderick Strong match from 2005, and the next three matches, one of those is one of my favorite matches of all time that we talk about in the second part, the Bryan Danielson versus Shingo Takagi from Dragon Gate USA, but that will be coming out next week. And then also, after every pay-per-view, we do live reactions, and at $8, you can get our live stream. So for every single live reaction, not just for pay-per-views, you can hop on into YouTube and listen to us live. And for $5 and $8 also, we have our Discord where we hang out throughout the week, and especially hang out during Dynamite and Rampage, just talking with all of our lovely patrons. It's a good time. It's easily the most chill Discord server I'm a part of. So you could get all of that at patreon.com/everythingelite. And did you have anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here, Nate?
No.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week. You could follow us at Everything Elite. Nate is at Epitasis. I am at Fujiheya. Aaron is at Aaron Like the Car. If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/everythingelite, or also go to mybookie.ag. Use promo code ELITE to instantly double your deposit. You get a double deposit bonus. But that's going to do it. So for Aaron, for Nate, I'm Mike. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.